You are listening to Confronting the Pipe Dream, voices on the front lines of resistance against pipelines. Confronting the Pipe Dream is a grassroots radio project which seeks to unite voices across colonial borders and bring those voices from the front lines to the foreground. As pipelines continue to expand, so does people's resistance. If we're going to stop the flows of oil and gas that are threatening our communities, we need to first open the airwaves. On today's program, we'll hear an interview with Cindy Spoon. Cindy is an organizer with the Texas Tar Sands Blockade. The Tar Sands Blockade is an open invitation for people across North America to join a peaceful direct action campaign to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. They stand with people of all backgrounds who are fighting to save their homes, land, and our planet from destruction by tar sands pumped by the TransCanada Company. The Tar Sands Blockade is coordinating grassroots actions across Texas and Oklahoma. So Cindy, you of course have been part of the Texas Tar Sands Blockade. So for those of us here who are unfamiliar with what that has been all about, can you fill us in and tell us about the Texas Tar Sands Blockade?
Of course. The Tar Sands Blockade is a full-time direct action campaign that's been running down in Texas against TransCanada's Keystone XL pipeline. Over the last year, we have deployed over 30 direct actions. And we've also supported organizing that's going on in Houston refinery communities to make sure that those being most affected by the tar sands, that their voices are included in the national dialogue about KXL. Now we're seeing more and more grassroots movements spring up in the United States against different tar sands projects, and we're helping to support those too. To talk a little bit about how we came to being, I'm going to talk about the resistance to Keystone XL before the tar sands blockade. So back in 2011, there were rolling sit-ins at the White House, which is now known as Tar Sands Action, asking Obama to please deny Keystone XL. These sit-ins were being mostly organized by big NGOs in the United States. In 2012, which was an election year for Obama, y'all might have heard about that, Obama and TransCanada worked out a political mechanism that benefited both of them. So they split this project in half, and Obama got to appease his constituents, Democrats and liberals, by saying, "Okay, I'll consider your claims. I'll take a little bit longer and I'll review this project so that the NGOs could claim this as a victory." And he came down to the South, where I live, in red states that never vote for Obama anyways, and gave a speech in front of a huge stack of TransCanada's like pipes stacked up, endorsing the pipeline, saying that he was going to expedite it, that he was ready to build this thing. And because it was an election year, a lot of these NGOs and progressives did not want to go against Obama. And so they kind of sold out Texas and Oklahoma and backed away from any organizing that would be happening there against this project. So the Tar Sands Blockade started. It was organized mostly by Texans and different landowners that were going to be directly affected by this thing. And it was really powerful to see Texans rising up and protesting the fossil fuel industry, because the state that I live in is completely dominated by oil and gas. So because Obama actually endorsed the pipeline where I live, there is no regulatory process. There is no politician. There's nothing that could stop this thing anymore within the system. We have absolutely no choice but to use direct action to stop this. So what we've been doing is we built tree sits and different blockades in the actual path of where the pipeline was proposed to go. We built a wall that was 30 feet by 120 feet and forced TransCanada to go around us. I guess I just want to like flag one of the things that I was just saying, that there is no process to stop these things, that we are in a situation right now, in a political situation, where the fossil fuel industry is literally the most powerful institution, and it's running rampant and it's running unchecked, and it's gambling with our futures and it's gambling with our health.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful video as well about the tar sands blockade that people can check out. If you search Mutual Aid Media, did a really great 10-minute video. I'm sure if you just use that thing people call the internet, search tar sands blockade, there's some stuff up there. One of the things that really struck me from one of the videos is people talking about how, you know, there's no kind of illusion that, you know, you folks down in Texas just doing these blockades, these direct actions is going to somehow stop the pipeline. So can you talk a little bit about how you see the actions that people are undertaking in Texas in terms of fitting in with a larger resistance?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. We were never under an illusion that we would just like build this one blockade and that would stop this thing. But we were hoping to inspire others and begin to see these direct action tactics taking place in different campaigns. So now we're seeing resistance in Michigan against Enbridge. We're seeing resistance in Utah against a Canadian company called U.S. Oil Sands.
Ironic.
There were indigenous folks up at the Red Lake blockade that have been occupying an Enbridge site for months now. And I wanna kind of echo something that Cam previously said, that we really cannot be focusing and playing this like whack-a-mole game on different pipeline projects, different infrastructure, and that we really need to be focusing on stopping this thing at the source, stopping tar sands where people that, you know, in the U.S., it's really about the Keystone XL right now. That's what all that's making it into mainstream media. But if we stop that pipeline, are people in the United States going to declare like campaign over, we won, when people up here are still living by the tar sands mine, still getting cancer from the tar sands mine? So,
mm-hmm. I mean, that brings up another really interesting question. If you look at the tar sands in northern Alberta, if you look at the communities that are impacted, it's so overwhelmingly, you know, indigenous communities who are living downstream from these toxic tailing ponds and, you know, from the smokestacks that are just spitting out toxins into the atmosphere. Maybe to give us a picture of what's happening in the States, and especially, you know, to bring the lens of environmental racism, can you talk a little bit about communities of color who are impacted by Keystone XL?
Of course. Yeah, because this is the Tar Sands Reality Check Tour, a good reality check is that this pipeline and the tar sands in general disproportionately affects people of color. So the process that TransCanada goes through to get the rights to what they call the easement, that's where the pipeline runs through, is they approach landowners, mostly white landowners, and even though everyone is getting screwed over the pipeline, it's a bad deal for everybody, no one's benefiting from it, but they approach white landowners and they go through this facade of, can we get your permission? We'll give you some money, or you can sign over. Eminent domain is the legal tool that they use in the United States to take people's private property away to build things like pipelines and highways. So they go through this facade of getting consent from landowners. Like I said, mostly white people owning property. But we know that at both ends of the pipeline, where people are the most affected at extraction and at the site of refining, it's communities of color, and TransCanada does not go through this same facade with them. So once again, everyone is getting screwed over by the pipeline, but it's just even just like the need for consent. I know down in the refinery in down in Texas, the pipeline actually splits into two, and it's getting refined in Houston and in Port Arthur. Port Arthur is like 98% African-American community. Where it's being refined in Houston is a community called Manchester, mostly a Chicano neighborhood, a lot of undocumented folks that actually can't challenge these things because they don't have the legal papers that the United States requires. So they're being bullied and targeted because of their status, their legal status. And then we know up on this end of the pipeline, like you were just saying, that it's like mostly all indigenous folks living around the site of extraction. So this pipeline alone is a sheer example of environmental racism.
You just heard an interview with Cindy Spoon, an organizer with the Texas Tar Sands blockade. For more information on their direct action campaign to stop the Keystone XL pipeline, visit www.tarsandsblockade.org. You've been listening to Confronting the Pipe Dream, voices on the front lines of resistance against pipelines. This project is supported by the Media Co-op and Kuperg McGill. Original music brought to you by One Speed Bike. For more information on this series, please contact confrontingthepipedream@riseup.net. Also, you can visit our website at www.confrontingthepipedream.com and follow us on Twitter at Radio Pipe Dream.